Do you know the story of Muhammad Ali on an aeroplane? Do you know this story? I must have told you this before, a few nods. The air hostess says to Muhammad Ali, one of the world's greatest, most famous boxers, of course, traveling, says to him just before takeoff, "Sir, fasten your seatbelt." To which Muhammad Ali replied, "Superman don't need no seatbelt." To which the air hostess said, "Sir, Superman don't need no plane. Fasten your seatbelt." It's a delightful put-down, isn't it? In the ring, on that piece of canvas, within the ropes, under the lights, there, sir, you may be king of the jungle. But here, in this tube of aluminium that flies through the air at 400 miles an hour, you are the same as me and the same as the person sitting next to you. You are an ordinary human being whose body will crumple on impact. Put your belt on. I think we know, don't we, the opposite of meekness when we see it. The boxer, the sportsman, the banker, the trader. It's the person on the Apprentice TV show, isn't it? Sitting across the table from Lord Sugar. Surely if there is one group who do not get anywhere or anything in life, it is the meek. If you've seen The Apprentice, you know that show. Brazen displays of the exact opposite of meekness, all in the attempt to inherit the earth. £250,000 business deal or whatever it is with Lord Sugar. I was personally taught by the Dalai Lama and Desmond Tutu, says Melody. I am the best there is. And yeah, I'm not bad looking as well, says Vincent. I'm top of the class in every area, says Jim. Because what matters most is to get your hands on as much as you can. Inherit and gain the earth. Blessed are the meek, for they will inherit the earth. Sometimes small doors lead to great treasures. Now we're looking at these Beatitudes, a verse at a time, a Beatitude at a time. Aren't they so rich? Small verses, small doors. But Jesus says they are the doors into his kingdom. When you put your eyes on them, you stand and stare at them and you ask yourself, what do they mean? And then you walk into them and you find yourself on the other side of them in the kingdom where everything is back to front and upside down. I want to give you three things this evening about Matthew chapter 5, verse 5. Blessed are the meek, for they will inherit the earth. Three things: where meekness grows, what meekness is, and how meekness wins. Okay? So that's where it comes from, what it actually is, and how the meek inherit the earth. Now, I don't know about you, but as I've sat and looked at that this week, I wanted to know what that means. I'd quite like to inherit the earth. So here's the first one. Number one, where meekness grows. It comes from grace, not genes. Meekness grows in grace, not genetics. What I mean by this is, don't leave behind the radical nature of what Jesus is doing here. Remember, I've said he is switching the price tags of everything in the world. So meekness must be something extraordinary. It is not general niceness. Plenty of people seem to be meek, don't they, because of their natural disposition. But that is not what Jesus is talking about. He's not talking about timidness. He's not talking about quietness. Someone has said this: an agreeable personality often has an influence out of all proportion to their ability or position in society. Isn't that true? An agreeable personality often has an influence out of all proportion to ability or position. So true, isn't it? The nice girl can get very far in life simply because she's nice. But agreeableness does not get you into the kingdom. No, it must be something more. Some people are born naturally nice. But this is not natural niceness. Martin Lloyd-Jones says, niceness is something you get in dogs and cats. One dog is nicer than another. One cat is nicer than another. This isn't that. Meekness does not grow naturally. It grows from grace. It grows from a heart that the Lord Jesus Christ himself has changed. Whatever type of personality you have. Now, do you know how we know that? Look where it comes. It comes after the first two Beatitudes. Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are those who mourn, for they will be comforted. You see, you enter the kingdom by realizing you are spiritually bankrupt. You have nothing. And as you realize that, your own sin and poverty is not just something we shrug our shoulders at and say, oh, well, that's the way it is. It's something we mourn and grieve over and long for it to be different. And here's the thing. No man or woman ever becomes meek in verse 5 without first being poor in verse 3 and sorrowful in verse 4. You see the connection? These are the steps down into the kingdom, and each one leads to the other. Many people try to be meek, don't they? I'm going to try harder. I must stop shooting my mouth off. Note to self, be more considerate of others. But self-help never works, does it? Or not for long. You can't try to be meek. Jesus has to make you meek. And he does it by leading you by the hand, first to verse 3, and then to verse 4. To reach verse 5, you first have to walk into 3 and 4. Meekness grows from God's grace. It's God's work in my heart to humble me and to bring me low. It doesn't run in my family, I can assure you. It's got nothing to do with DNA and genetics. Now here's something else. Some commentators argue that these Beatitudes actually become increasingly more difficult, so that only if you have done the one before can you ever manage to do the one that comes after it on the list. It's like in the gym, isn't it? Your first day, there you are, all your new equipment, your new shoes, gear, and you see people lifting 50 kilos. Don't try it. That's what they say to you, the trainer. Do not try this at home. Day one. Start with 10 and work up. Don't start with verse 5. Here's a lovely insight which explains why verse 5 is taking us deeper into Christian character, deeper into profoundly beautiful Christ-like character. Here's the insight. Many people have pointed out that the first two Beatitudes are entirely private. Okay, they are completely to do with me and God. Me before him. But meekness, you see, now has to do with what I am before God and before other people. Here is the first part of inward Christian character now turned outwards towards others. You see, think about a hermit living all alone. You might think of him as poor in spirit and sorrowful for his sin, but you could not call him meek unless you saw him in his dealings with others. Meekness is the first two Beatitudes now brought into contact with other people. Isn't that right? It's the broken person and the sorrowing for sin person now in a room full of people who will try their patience and test their temper. So how are they going to respond? What are they going to be like? How will they speak? What will they do and not do? Still internal, yes. It still has to do with the attitudes of the heart, the character, but now it's who I am in contact with the world and with you. So here's the second thing for us to see. Here's what meekness is, number two. Here's what meekness looks like. The best Christian writers and preachers down through the years have always said something like this. Okay, here's a summary. The meek man or woman is the one who is amazed that God and man can think of him or her as well as they do and treat him or her as well as they do. Okay, the meek person is someone who is amazed that God and other people can think of me as well as they do and treat me as well as they do. You notice in that meekness directed towards God, that's verses 3 and 4 again, and directed outwards towards others. And it looks like this: every single day of my life, I am astonished that God has given me today to live and brought a person like me into his kingdom. And alongside that, I am amazed that you treat me as well as you do, as kindly as you do. I think that's lovely. Meekness is a true view of myself before God and before you. It's a right attitude towards myself expressed in my relationship towards my Heavenly Father and towards you, my brother or sister. That's what it is. So what does it actually look like? Well, here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to attempt an identikit picture of the meek person. Here's how you spot them. Five things, okay? Not original to me. Here's what I discovered this week reading others. Here's what people have said down through the years. Number one, the meek person is humble. Shakespeare said that Caesar bestrides the narrow world like a colossus. Caesar strode through the world like a giant. That's the nature of pride, isn't it? We think we're bigger than the world, bigger than others. But humble people do not expect the best seats, the most recognition, the most applause. Jesus said about himself, "I am meek and lowly in heart." Jesus said that, the eternal Son, who made the universe and whom one day a world made new will worship and fall before and adore forever. He said, "He is lowly in heart." Here we are, running all over this earth like little tin soldiers with our degrees and our jobs and our intellects and our talents, all dotting around the globe like little tiny ants, each thinking we're somehow the queen bee. Don Carson says this: individually, every person tends to assume that they are at the center of the universe, and therefore they relate poorly to the 4 billion others who are laboring under the same delusion. Do you know that pride takes different forms? Pride doesn't always look like the puffed out chest and the haughty spirit. There's a different kind of pride, a kind of inverted pride, which takes the form of being immensely sensitive about ourselves. Always watching out for myself doesn't have to mean I'm always trying to be first. It can look like constant self-pity, that I seem to be last. Isn't it one of the greatest curses of the fall? Sensitivity about myself. Martin Lloyd-Jones says, we spend the whole of our life watching ourselves. Isn't that true? We spend the whole of our lives watching ourselves. I love that phrase. How am I being perceived? Where am I in the pecking order? But when a person becomes meek, all of that is gone. It's finished. Meek believer no longer worries about himself or herself and how they're being perceived and weighed up and treated by others. We're not self-protective, defensive people when we're meek. John Bunyan, who wrote Pilgrim's Progress, said this: he that is down need fear no fall. He that is down need fear no fall. When someone truly knows themselves as low before God, you can't put them down lower through what you say or do to them. Number two, the meek person is gentle. Those of you who've been in house groups, do you remember just the week past, or maybe for others it was different timings, Romans chapter 14, the weak and the strong in church, rubbing shoulders with each other, rubbing each other the wrong way. Christian gentleness is not mere niceness. It is a strong personality and a tough person stooping low to the weak. A meek person will often give up and go without something that by rights they could have and do. And they go without for the good of others. They're gentle. We know this, don't we? Some believers are harsh and brusque and quick. And here, I think, is a test of meekness. Or the opposite, the test of harshness. You would not think of going to this Christian to tell them your troubles. That's the opposite of meekness, isn't it? I don't think I'll speak to them about what's really happening with me. We put it down to all sorts of things, don't we? I don't want to bother them, they're too busy. But really it's because we have an innate sense that they are not gentle. They do not know how to stoop low to my level, to bend to my frailties, to identify with me in my insecurities. Number three, the meek are patient. The meek are patient. Now, I love this from Charles Spurgeon. Okay, some of what Spurgeon says is so good. You're going to get a lot of him now, between now and the end of the sermon, okay? But trust me, it's good for you. You'll enjoy this. Spurgeon says this. He says, little pots soon boil over. Little pots soon boil over. So are you a big pot or a little pot? We might say today, short fuses soon explode. Spurgeon says, I have known some professing Christians who are such very little pots that the smallest fire has made them boil over. And here's how he describes it. Here's what it looks like. When you never meant to hurt their feelings, they have been terribly hurt. The simplest remark has been taken as an insult and a construction put upon things that was never intended. And they make their brothers and sisters offenders for a word or half a word or aye, even sometimes for not saying a word. Whether a thing is done or left undone, it equally fails to please them. Small pots are always on the alert for some cause of annoyance. No, says Jesus, no, not among you, not among my friends, my children, my disciples, my family, not in the kingdom. Here's the fourth thing, forgiveness. It's always the mark of the disciple, isn't it? Forgiveness. Forgiveness is so, so hard and so costly. Tim Keller says somewhere that forgiveness is sometimes so painful that it feels like a greater wound than the thing which has upset you and which you're trying to forgive. Forgiveness is more painful than the thing that caused the hurt. It can be so agonizing to forgive that it feels like a death to yourself. And so we prefer, naturally, don't we, to keep ourselves alive by nursing our bitterness. Revenge, retaliation, vengeance. Three words that do not belong in a Christian's dictionary. Well, here's the last thing that many have spotted. Meekness means contentment. Meekness means contentment. Now, I want to try and apply this to us because I think contentment is right at the heart of this beatitude. It leads us to my final point. Here is how meekness wins. How meekness wins. Blessed are the meek. Isn't Jesus about to say, for they win in the end? They will win. They inherit the earth. We all want to inherit the earth. You do. I do. We want it all. We want wealth, health, happiness. We want wholeness. We want family, work, everything to be okay. We want all our ducks in a row. We want everything in the right place at the right time. Everyone wants to inherit the earth. It's why people play the lottery. It's why we save and save and plan for the future. It's why some men go to war. Alexander the Great, Napoleon sweeping through Europe into Russia. So here's the question for us. Who wins in the end? Caesar with his legions? Obama with his nukes? Or Christ with his cross? Who wins? If you know much about the religion of Islam, you will know that explicitly stitched into its very heart, Islam wants to inherit the earth and spread and spread and spread. And I hope you know this evening that the gospel is absolutely no different. What did God say to Abraham? I will make your descendants as numerous as the stars in the sky and the sand on the seashore. Now that is a lot of children, a lot of children. Friends, that to Abraham was a promise of inheriting the earth, the world. And we are in outright competition with Islam. We have a competing view of who will win the world. And how? So how does it happen? How do the meek inherit the earth? I think there are two ways in which it happens, two ways in which we do it. Here's the first way. Remember that Jesus is describing our inner attitudes. He's describing our hearts, our character, our deepest frame of mind. I wonder if you remember a few weeks ago, 2 Corinthians chapter 6, verse 10, Paul says he is sorrowful, yet always rejoicing, poor, yet making many rich. Now, remember this? Having nothing and yet possessing everything. Having nothing and yet possessing everything. There it is. Meekness is contentment, which is itself inheriting the earth. I have learned the secret of being content in any and every situation, whether well-fed or hungry or living in plenty or in want. Isn't that it? Yes, I think it is that. Why do we automatically think, when we look at verse 5, why do we automatically think that inheriting the earth means having more and more of the earth? It's what I automatically think when I look at it. Getting more stuff. Something new. But can't an inheritance be coming into a new and fuller and proper enjoyment of what you already have? Let me give you two pictures of this from Spurgeon. He gives two lovely pictures of what this contentment looks like. Here's the first one. I wonder if anybody can identify with this. He says this, "When I have been in a meek spirit..." Okay, when I've got this right, he says, inside my head and heart, "I have often felt as if everything around me belonged to me. I have walked through a gentleman's park, and I have been very much obliged to him for keeping it in such order for me to walk through it. I have gone into his house and seen his picture gallery, and I have been very grateful to him for buying such grand pictures, and I have hoped that he would buy a few more so that I could see them next time that I visit. I was very glad that I did not have to buy them and pay the servants to watch over them, and that everything was done for me. I have sometimes looked from a hill upon some far-reaching plain or some quiet village or some manufacturing town crowded with houses and shops, and I have felt that somehow they were all mine, although I had not the trouble of collecting the rents which people perhaps might like not to pay. I had only to look upon it all as the sun shone upon it, and then to look up to heaven and say, 'My Father, this is all yours, and therefore it is all mine. For I am an heir of God and a joint heir with Jesus Christ.'" In this sense, the meek-spirited man inherits the earth. Have you ever experienced that contentment at some experience you have, seeing somebody with something good, and you simply thank God that it's there. You do not feel jealous or envious that it is not yours. You are glad that it is here in God's world for you to enjoy. Now here's the second way that Spurgeon does, this time a little bit more humorously. I hope you can hear what he's saying here. He says this: you may have misery, or you may have happiness according to your state of heart in any condition of life. Misery or happiness according to your state of heart in any condition of life. The meek man is thankful, happy, and contented, and it is that contentment that makes life enjoyable. So it is at our mealtimes. Okay, here's two illustrations. Here comes a man home to his dinner. He bows his head and says, "For what we are about to receive, the Lord make us truly grateful." And then he opens his eyes and grumbles, "What, cold mutton again?" His spirit is very different from that of the good old Christian, who when he reached home found two herrings and two or three potatoes on the table, and he pronounced over them this blessing: "Heavenly Father, we thank thee that you have ransacked earth and sea to find us this entertainment." His dinner was not so good as the other man's, but he was content with it, and that is what made the difference. You see, rather than always trying to raise our possessions up to the level of our desires, the meek learn to bring their desires down to the level of their possessions. There are two ways to get enough. One is to accumulate more and more, and the other is to desire less. Isn't that true? One is to accumulate more and more, and the other is to desire less. And that will lead to contentment. The humble Christian is far happier in a cottage than the wicked in a palace. I think your checkbook might show you your contentment. Maybe your heart alone will tell you your contentment. Are the gifts of God's good earth around you enough for you? Or do you think happiness is somehow out there, found in something you don't yet have? But I have to finish with this. I think if you look at verse 5, I think the promise in that verse is even more wonderful. I think verse 5 will in the end be literally true. Literally true. The meek, Christ's people, God's children, will one day be given the world. We can have it all now by our attitude, but one day we will have it all actually, really, truly. That's why we read Psalm 37, verse 10, "A little while and the wicked will be no more. Though you look for them, they will not be found, but the meek will inherit the land and enjoy great peace." Go to the land I will show you, God said to Abraham, to Canaan, the promised land. And what does Hebrews say? That as Abraham went, he knew he was looking forward to the city with foundations, whose builder and architect was God. See, I think this might be a bit controversial, but I think at the end, the Bible's teaching is not that at the end, the righteous, the meek, are raptured and removed from the earth, stolen away while the earth goes to ruin below. I think the Bible's teaching is Psalm 37, verse 10, the wicked will be no more. Noah and the flood, the wicked are removed. And the earth is always given anew, afresh to God's people. They emerge from the ark. The earth is theirs, inheriting the world. One day, so too will we. One day, God will say to his children, his meek, his humble, his gentle, his patient, his forgiving ones, "This new earth is yours. It's yours." And so he says to us this evening, "Blessed are the meek, for they will inherit the earth." Amen.